Welcome to Wicked Crime, a Massachusetts true crime podcast. In this episode, I'll be getting into the death of Trang Phong Ho, who was murdered in 1995 by her Harvard roommate Sinedu Tedesi, after which Sinedu then killed herself. Many people blame Harvard for the lack of resources for students who are struggling mentally, but are they really at fault for what happened? As always, listener discretion is advised. So let's get into the background of both these women involved in this case. So first we have Trang Phong Ho. Trang and her family came to America from Saigon in Vietnam, where they've been trying to escape from for a long time due to the chaos happening in the country at the end of the Vietnam War. The North Vietnamese had taken over the city, and the Ho family wanted to get out after both parents had been sent to re-education camps earlier on in their lives. So in 1985, when Trang was 10 years old, her father took her and her older sister onto a boat packed with other people trying to flee Vietnam. He had to leave half the family behind at this point because they couldn't all go together. The girls were forced to cut their hair in order to disguise themselves as boys to prevent being raped on board. They stayed for a year in a refugee camp in Indonesia where their father taught them English, and eventually they made it to California. The family then moved to the East Coast because there was better opportunities there, better schools for the kids, and over time the rest of Trang's family finally made it over from Vietnam. They lived in Medford, Mass, and Trang stood out in high school because she was this brilliant student, she was a tutor, and she was the valedictorian of her high school. And in her freshman year at Harvard, she was named one of the 25 people who could save Boston in Boston Magazine. So obviously, like, this girl had a lot going for her. Though she was a shy student, she did have an established group of friends, and she was very close with her family after her mother and her father had a messy divorce, and he moved back to the West Coast. Trang met Sinedu during their freshman year and agreed to room with her for their sophomore year, and they were placed in Dunster House. And obviously this decision would eventually prove to be a fatal one. I wanted to make sure to talk a bit about Trang's background because her story seems like it gets overlooked a lot because people seem to focus on Sinedu and why she did what she did. But you can't forget who the actual, like, victim was. Like, Trang didn't ask for any of this, obviously. Like, she was a smart, kind, accomplished girl who was clearly going to do great things. And she even worked in a cancer lab at the Dana-Farber Institute in Boston. So I think her story is important to tell. But let's look at Sinedu. So both these girls came from sort of tumultuous countries. And Sinedu and her family, they lived in Ethiopia during the time of the Red Terror, where the military took over rule of the country and ushered in the beginning of the Ethiopian Civil War. Sinedu's family was pretty well off, but things became difficult when Sinedu was 7 and her father was imprisoned for 2 years. She focused on her studies and ended up going to the International Community School, where she graduated valedictorian and got accepted to study medicine at Harvard, which obviously was a pretty big deal. But when she was in college, she realized that she wasn't as superior academically as she was back in Ethiopia, and she was like a B student. But the biggest problem for Sinedu was her social isolation. Though she had a family in the area, she rarely saw them and she struggled to make friends, which is understandable because it's not always easy making friends when you're in college, especially when you're alone, you don't really know anyone on campus, and you're from another country. But this was something that really tormented Sinedu, and a lot of her diary entries showed how much isolation was affecting her. She made a lot of entries about how to react in social situations and how different things were in America than in Ethiopia. According to the Killer Babes podcast, which I listened to a couple times and they have some really good information in there, she kept notebooks and diaries, and one of which she called My Small Book of Social Rules and Social Problems I Faced. And just hearing a quote from them shows how concerned she was with interacting with people to the point of treating it like analytically. Like, she was trying to figure out topics to discuss with people and bring up, how to talk to people in the dining hall, and wanting to give herself grades and how she did. Like, trying to push herself to reach out to people. But it sort of seemed like it was to no avail. It was almost like she had no idea how to present herself to people, which it can be really hard. Like, it's not an easy thing to interact with people when you don't know how to do it or how to reach out. And here's a quote that the Girls in the Killer Babes podcast go over that came from the New Yorker, where they posted a lot of her diary entries. "Do not show off what you really think. Put on a mask. Do not smile when you do not need to smile. If you are talking about something serious, make your face serious. If you want to threaten, put away your smile and look ominous. If you are sorry, make your face look sorrowful, but do not smile when you do not need to smile." So hearing this almost makes it seem like she didn't know how to like show emotion correctly. And you sort of see that in people with atypical personality disorder, which is technically psychopaths, even though there are many normally functioning people who have this in society. I don't think Sinead was this. And a lot of them aren't like the Ted Bundy types who end up killing people. It's usually like a perfect storm of trauma and all sorts of stuff I've talked about in other podcasts. But they have to learn to mimic human emotion because they don't experience it like normal people. So in order to fit in, you have to know how to behave. And it seems like Sinedu was having that problem. Like, she had no idea how to react around other people and thought way too much about it. But it could also be a cultural thing. She mentioned in one of her diaries that she had teachers for music and painting, but never ones for social interaction. And I think being an outsider whose culture was very different than that in America made everything so much worse for her. So it was obvious that Sinedu was struggling and that she didn't actually try to reach out to people very much, but she did try in a sort of an unconventional way. She would find people in the phone book and write them letters begging them to at least write her back. A quote from one of these letters reads, "I am desperate. As far as I can remember, my life has been hellish. Year after year, I become lonelier and lonelier. I am like a person who can't swim, choking in a river. All you have to do is give me a hand." She ended one with saying, "Please don't shut the door in my face." And one of the recipients of these letters actually sent it to Harvard, where apparently it was like tucked away in a file somewhere and never investigated. Sinedu was also seeing a therapist on campus, Dr. Douglas Powell, but she only was allowed to meet with him once per month, and I guess the therapist said that he had no idea how depressed Sinedu really was. She was encouraged to go see a therapist outside of school, but being a student from a foreign country, she didn't really have like the insurance to go do that. It's not exactly cheap. And it was common for them to suggest that students go off campus to see more available therapists. And with students from other countries, they mainly assumed that most of their problems came from like a lack of assimilation. And obviously that was some part of what Sinedu was going through, but she had a lot of other issues because someone who can't assimilate doesn't also just go out and start committing murder. So we have both these girls at Harvard, both from foreign countries and somewhat chaotic backgrounds, but Trang is doing well socially, and she's got friends, she's got a home to go to, she goes and sees her family often, her grades are decent. But then we have Sinedu, who, despite the fact that she's desperate to connect with people, she eats alone in the dining hall, she doesn't see her family, and at the end of freshman year, her roommate tells her that she doesn't want to be roommates again. But she meets Trang in a class, and Trang agrees to room with her for sophomore year. And so that problem gets solved. And I do wonder if it's like a case of Trang just being so nice and trying to help someone who needed it. Because I'm not sure how Harvard works, but I'm sure Sinedu would have just gotten assigned a random roommate and maybe in a way that would have been better. Because Sinedu kind of like mistook Trang's kindness for genuine friendship. And once Sinedu knew that they were going to be rooming, she wrote in her diary a quote that's kind of, it kind of shows that she was putting more into this than what Trang was. "My rooming problem was solved in the best possible way, saving my face, and also with a girl I thought I would really enjoy to be with a girl I could make the queen of my life. I could just see myself raising my head proudly whenever people ask me who I'm rooming with. I could see myself working hard to improve my life so as to not spoil the beautiful chance I'm given." So yeah, just like reading that, like her expectations were way higher rooming with Trang than Trang's were with her. Like, Trang was just probably being nice, you know, she probably needed a roommate too, and Sinedu asked, and here we were. But she seemed to think that rooming with Trang would, like, solve all of her problems. Obviously, they didn't. And as they roomed together, it became more and more clear that their relationship was sort of one-sided. For one, Sinedu actually considered Trang her best friend and told her father this, but Trang definitely didn't seem to feel the same way about her. And she actually had a best friend, and it was another Vietnamese girl from the area, and her name was Tao Nguyen. It might be Nguyen. I've heard him pronounced both ways. So Tao would stay over a lot, and Trang would go home every week and be with her family. And this started to like really piss Sinedu off because she expected Trang to spend all this time with her and help sort of bring her into more social situations, but that didn't happen. They didn't even really have this deep friendship that Sinedu thought they did. So only a month into their sophomore year, Sinedu wrote in her diary talking all about like if she were to kill someone, Trang would be the first she would kill, and she may talk of suicide and like killing others as a means to an end. And obviously someone wasn't reading her diary, but there's warning signs like all over the place right there. And once they entered into their junior year, Sinedu's behavior as a roommate changed, and she was a lot more difficult to deal with. She was really messy, and she would purposely not tell Trang about phone messages left for her. And so Trang actually put in a request to change rooms, but the request was denied. Towards the end of the year, when the time came to decide housing for the next year, she finally broke the news to Sinedu that she'd be rooming with other people, which didn't go over well at all. Trang actually felt bad about doing this, but Tao and her family like told her, hey, you have to do this for yourself, you're making the right decision, this girl is not working out. So Trang felt justified in what she was doing. And Sinedu begged her to change her mind, but Trang, she made a decision, she was set in it. So Sinedu actually wrote Trang a letter trying to salvage things, but it didn't help. Here's a quote from the letter. I thought we were going to do stuff together. You'll always have a family to go to, and I'm going to have no one. But the thing is, like, she did have family in the country, and they weren't, like, far away or anything. She wasn't alone in that regard, and it's almost like she was trying to victimize herself a little to get Trang to feel bad for her. But the letter didn't change anything, and Sinedu grew more hostile, being uncharacteristically messy, not talking, and clearly just being upset at what was happening. Trang wrote her back, trying to explain why she made her decision and adding, I hope we can still be friends, obviously just trying to be like nice about the whole thing. But it didn't matter at that point, and Sinedu had basically shut down, even locking Trang out of the room at one point. Things reached their tipping point in May of 1995, when it seemed that Sinedu had made her decision on how to deal with her situation with Trang. She bought some rope and two knives, and then mailed a picture of herself to the Harvard newspaper, The Crimson, and attached a note saying, keep this picture, there will soon be a very juicy story involving this woman. But there was nothing investigated about this anonymous letter, and I think it actually got thrown out, and police later found it in the trash. But it just marks another very small clue that, if it had been looked into, maybe it could have prevented what happened. By that point, when Sinedu had bought weapons and sent in her picture, it seemed that her decision was made. It was time for finals, and she did attend some of her finals, some of them she didn't, and she went to go visit her friend Neb a week before the murder, and he commented that she looked transformed. She was wearing makeup and shorts, something that was taboo in Ethiopian dress code, and she seemed happy. He figured later that it was her way of saying goodbye, and that this like lightheartedness she had was due to the fact that she had made the decision to do what she did. Which is pretty common for people who plan to commit suicide, as in also giving possessions away, and she allegedly gave away her computer to one of her cousins. In the final days before everything happened, she spoke to her brother on the phone and seemed completely normal. She just said that she was dealing with finals and she didn't feel that good. On May 27th, 1995, Tao came over to stay with Trang and celebrate the end of exams. When they left the room, Sinedu was curled up in bed crying, and hours later, when they returned, she was still in the same position. Trang tried to ask her if she was okay, but she just waved her off. I'm assuming Sinedu was probably thinking about everything that she was planning to do, and if she was crying, maybe she wasn't completely convinced it was something that she should do, but obviously, her mind was made up. When Trang and Tao returned for the final time that night, Sinedu was laying face down with the lights on, and the two girls ended up going to Trang's room and eventually went to bed, sleeping head to toe as was Vietnamese custom. At some point in the morning, both girls heard an alarm go off and realized it was Sinedu's. Tao heard her go up to the bathroom and turn the water on before she went back to sleep. But Tao woke up later and saw Sinedu standing over Trang, stabbing her silently with a hunting knife. Tao tried to stop her, but Sandu managed to slash her arms and feet, Tao unable to get the knife away from her and stop her. So Tao rushed out of bed and out of the room to try and find help, but she heard the door click behind her and knew that she couldn't get back in because it was now locked from the inside, leaving Trang stuck inside there with Sinedu, who was obviously trying to kill her. So she ran down the hall to try and wake someone up to help her because Trang was stuck in there and she didn't know what to do, and she ended up outside Dunster House where there was a student eating breakfast, thankfully, and when he saw Tao, he was pretty shocked. Obviously, she was covered in blood, but he called the police for her. When they arrived, they found Trang on the floor. Clearly, she tried to get out of bed, but she succumbed to her injuries. She'd been stabbed 45 times in the head and chest. Sinedu had barricaded herself inside the bathroom, and when they finally opened it, she had hung herself from the shower rod with a rope she'd purchased. And clearly, it was something that she'd set up beforehand, because everything was measured perfectly and tied, and the rest of the rope was set away neatly under the sink. It's likely that when Tao heard the water go in the bathroom, she was setting up the noose. They did try to resuscitate Sinedu, but she too was pronounced dead. I can't imagine how Tao felt about all of this, because obviously she panicked and she left to go get help, but what if she stayed and tried to get Sinedu off? Like a lot of situations, I think we can like try and say, oh, well, we would do this, or why didn't they do that? But you can't really know how you would react unless you were in it. And I hope no one's ever in this situation. But I'm sure it's something that she replays like a million times over in her head what happened. And she like clearly did the best she could. Harvard actually came under fire for what happened because a lot of people believed that they had plenty of evidence to point to Sinedu needing help and they did little about it. Like I mentioned earlier, she was seeing Dr. Powell, but only once a month. And he claimed that she was seeing him to help her adjust to Harvard, when in reality, she probably had some kind of undiagnosed mental illness that got worse and worse under the conditions she was in. And apparently, he actually tried to call her either that day or like that week, but it wasn't like to try and help her or anything, it was to try and cancel an appointment that she had with him. So she was seeing him, but not enough for it to be helpful to her, and she didn't have insurance to seek outside help, which students are encouraged to, like I said. She sent out those letters to people begging for interaction, some of which were returned to the school, and that alone should have been a warning sign. Trang tried to transfer rooms to get away from her. She sent that picture of herself and the note to the newspaper. So these were all signs that something weird was going on, but none of them were picked up on. Apparently Harvard is notorious for having pretty bad resources for students suffering from mental illness, and according to an article by GBH, that between 2007 and 2016, 8 students committed suicide, and the school is known for being incredibly stressful to students, especially Asian students. In the year before the murder, 3 students committed suicide at Harvard. So clearly the university needed some help in the mental health department, and there was an outcry after what happened, which did result in some changes. Over the following 5 years, they increased staff and resources, but obviously it could still do with some more improvement. Unfortunately, it's Sinedu who usually gets the most attention in this case, and I think it's because people are sort of convinced that Harvard let the ball drop and could have helped her. She's seen as someone mentally ill who, because she didn't get help, ended up having a mental break. But I think it's one of those things where, yeah, she was mentally ill, but not all mentally ill people break down and commit murder. She's still a murderer, and people are quick to forget that she planned to kill Trang. It was all like very premeditated. And poor Trang, she was like this bright, kind person who obviously most likely would have done really great things if she was still alive. And I mean, even Sinedu, she wanted to be a doctor and go back and like help Ethiopia and help her country where she was from. It's very sad for both girls, obviously. And maybe if Sinedu had gotten help, she wouldn't have done what she did. Or if she hadn't developed this intense attachment to Trang, then Trang wouldn't have been killed, but it easily could have been another roommate. It almost seemed like things happened in such a way that the outcome was what it was, and if something had even gone a little different, it wouldn't have ended with a murder-suicide. But maybe Sinedu was just like a ticking time bomb waiting for the right conditions to go off. Trang's family did actually try to file a lawsuit against the university, but nothing came of it. But her death completely rocked her family, of course, who had risked so much to come to America, seeking a better life. And Tao was certainly affected, and was quoted as saying, I've lost my best friend, my life companion, my sister. Sinedu's family reacted a little differently and believed that, at first, she'd actually been murdered and that the university had lied in some way or, like, something crazy had happened and they were waiting to find, like, a killer. Because committing suicide is pretty rare in Ethiopian culture and it's sort of taboo with the whole, like, a soul is damned to be taken by the devil kind of thing. They also believe that she was maybe possessed by an evil spirit, then that was why she did what she did. Basically, her family didn't want to believe that their daughter was capable of killing someone and then killing herself, and I can understand that. It's very hard to accept, especially because she never said anything was wrong. They had no indication that something bad was going on with her mentally. But I think that's also kind of cultural. Like, it wasn't the kind of thing, like, she was going to go and tell her family how sad and depressed she was. I don't think that was very common in Ethiopian culture. So she was buried in Ethiopia with her family still believing that she couldn't have done this, but honestly, there's really no other way that something else could have happened. I'm sure you could try and argue that, like, Tao wasn't truthful about her account of things, but that just doesn't make any sense. Sinedu had clearly been troubled for a long time, and Trang had to suffer for it. Melanie Thurmstrom wrote a book about the entire case called Halfway Heaven, which is based on a quote from Trang who said, "This beautiful place, which is halfway heaven," while talking about Harvard. You can get it on Amazon, and I'll post a link on my website at wickedxcrime.wordpress.com. And she was the one who wrote the initial article in the New Yorker. She ended up going to Ethiopia, and she spoke to both families of both girls. So if you were interested in reading more in-depth and reading more excerpts from Sandu's diaries, I would look into reading her book or looking at the article in the New Yorker. You do have to pay for it or get a subscription if you're not subscribed to the New Yorker. So I didn't do that, but it is on there. There's also an article by Pax to All, which I found on WordPress, and that has a lot of quotes and information on it that I believe is from both Melanie Thurmstrom's book and the New Yorker article, and I'll be posting that on the website too. It wasn't easy to find direct quotes from Sinedu's diaries, but the ones I found or listened to on the Killer Babes and the Crimes of Passion podcast were very interesting. She was obviously really in need of help, and it's such a sad case for both these girls and the families and friends that they left behind. So thank you for listening. I'm going to post all my sources, as always, on my website, wickedxcrime.wordpress.com, as usual. The next episode, it may take a bit longer to come out because I'm still deciding what I want to do it on. I was kind of thinking maybe the Salem Witch Trials, but that might be, like, way too much to dive into. That might need a lot of time to work on. And I'm going to be editing this podcast that I'm recording right now after I get my wisdom teeth taken out. So that should be fun. It's going to be an interesting week. But hey, you know what? We made it through 2020. Happy New Year to everyone listening. I'm hoping for better things in this coming year, or at least maybe not better, but just more hopeful. We don't want to jinx us so early on, right? So you can find me on Facebook if you search Wicked Crime, on Twitter at wicked_crime, and on my website where you can see pictures from the case and my blog posts on it and all my sources, like I said. My theme song is by Mr. Kevin MacLeod. Who else? So as always, take care of yourself, look after yourself, get used to writing 2021 on everything, go find a cat to pet, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.